Lending ideas is always a fascinating idea. We have so many ideas that come into our mind, so many ideas that come into our heart, and we compartmentalize them. We take the idea, I am independently wealthy, I'm independently wealthy, I'm independently wealthy. We say it and we say it and we say it. We do not stop and think what it means to be independently wealthy. We don't blend the idea with the concept. No. What does it mean to be independently wealthy? Well, it means, now you could say it in the negative, I don't have any bills, I don't have this, I don't have that problem, or you can say it in the positive, and you say, I'm independently wealthy. I'm surrounded by wealthy people. Is that so tough? I'm surrounded by wealthy circumstances. People invite me out on their yachts. People invite me out on their boats. They invite me out on their tennis courts. They say, man, you are a very fine-looking human being. I bet you can play tennis very well. Would you like to come over and play with me? And you say, well, sure, love it. Everyone invites you into their opulent world. And as you are in with these opulent people, you begin to create opulence in your own world. Now, let's just look at Greg. Greg has an offer to possibly go on a boat trip with a person for, what was it, 6 months? For 6 months. And it's up in the fjords of Washington and Oregon up there, quite lovely. And Greg knows that he should associate with wealthy people to develop his attitude of independent wealth. But he has a foredrawn conclusion of how these things are going to happen. And he feels that it has to happen 1, 2, 3 instead of 3, 2, 1. And because of that, he cuts off the opportunity to have different circumstances take place in his life. Now, if he doesn't go, he will have other beautiful opportunities that will come his way, to be sure. But I always think that if you have an opportunity to be with the finest and the best, I go for the top. I go for the finest. Now, a man who is a multi-billionaire sounds to me like he knows how to make money, and he invests money wisely. And that if he were to have Greg as an associate or as a partner or whatever, Greg would be with him because he was working on the boat and helping him on the boat, and Greg can't shut up talking about philosophy and talking about great ideas, the man would soon recognize that Greg had no interest in anything except being a perfectly wonderful, successful person. And he'd say, well, now that's the kind of people I like running my companies. This positive idea. Would you mind starting out at $200,000 a year? And Greg would say, well, now, well, it's $300,000, you know. And so the opportunity would come. But we have to blend our ideas, our statements, our affirmations with the opportunities that come our way. Because if you say, I'm independently wealthy, and you don't bend over and pick up a box full of money that's lying right in front of you, and you're on a desert island, so to speak, you know, doesn't belong to anybody else that you know of, you're very foolish, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to carry out the aspects of this that bring this to you. And part of the aspects that bring this to you are listening to your heart. Now, Stefan has written us a letter here in which he pointed out that he would like to be a little more free of the rules and regulations of the monastery, if you will, or of what we say you have to do if you're going to be a successful spiritual master, and run with the crowd. He knows you can't do that. He knows you can't do that, but he still asked the question. And so we answered to him, and we said, follow your heart. Follow whatever it is that makes you happy. And if you would like to have a successful life, then act in every way successful and positive. If you would like to have an unsuccessful life, then act in every way that is unsuccessful and not positive. That's just the way it is. Now, what is one of the biggest things that we teach? I know you're going to say many things, but one of the biggest things that we teach is standing up for whatever we have agreed to do. for it's not taking responsibility, but it's standing up for what we agreed to do. Now, if you agree to come over to my house and clean the house, and then you don't show, I don't have much respect for you in my mind. I think, well, now he must have had other things that were more important than doing that. But more important than doing that? More important than doing that? More important than what? His word! It's not cleaning my house. That is the most unimportant thing in the world. But his word is the most important thing in the world. If you ever agree to do something, no matter how insignificant it may appear to you, or no matter how other things may come along that take precedence in your mind over doing it, you can't. If your word is your bond, if your word is your principle, if your word, you speak your word and boom, magic happens. Well, you can't expect that you're going to speak your word sometimes and be exonerated from whatever you spoke your word for. Don't go around speaking your word that you're going to make promises. Don't make promises unless you really plan to keep them. And don't make promises because they're insignificant, because there are no insignificant promises. All promises are just as big and important as anything else. If you promise that you're going to be a good president of the United States and you're going to run this country in a positive way to the benefit of the people, or if you promise your wife, I'll be home by 5 and we'll get ready to go to the movie, and 5:10 comes along, you're not there yet, 5:20 comes along, and your wife says, well, I thought you'd be late, so, you know, I wasn't worried about it. But your wife has no respect for your word because she has seen it misused. She has seen it given the heave-ho merely because it was convenient not to do it. You stood at the office for another 5 minutes talking to somebody there instead of saying, my wife's waiting for me. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk about this tomorrow. My wife is waiting at the door for me, and we're going out at 5 o'clock. I told her I'd be there, and I'm always punctual. But this is important. I want to talk to you. Come ride along with me if you want. Ride along with me in my car, and then you can take the bus back to where, or even my wife and I will drive you back. But come on, I'm not going to be late for my wife. I promised my wife, and I believe in my promises. And my wife is just, well, no, my wife's not important. My wife's wonderful, but my promise is important. My promise is important because I made it, and I stand by my promises, no matter what. You see, this is what happens in the school of the master. All of you were given opportunities to make promises, and you didn't follow through on them. Some you did. Oh, I don't say you didn't do good, but I'm saying that I wouldn't be talking to you today if you had followed through on them. That's true. That's true. But the promise, that's just my wife. She understands. Come on, I'll have another beer with you. You know? Or, yes, we'll talk about that thing. Or, yes, how big a fish was that you got, you say? You know? It's just my wife waiting for me. That's not important. It's not a matter of his wife. It's not a matter of anything. It's a matter of his promise. Now, you see, to be a master, you don't make promises. You just do. You don't tell people, I'll be there, or I won't be there, or I'll do this, or I won't do that. You just do it. Because you know better than to make promises. Because you don't want to be tied to anything. You just do whatever you want to do. You say, I will be a monk. Well, that means a lot of promises. You will do the house rules. You will do all the other little things that, and all these things here, one-pointed, untouchable, unpossessed, non-judgmental, all that good stuff. You'll do that, but hey, that's not easy. That's not easy. Not because they're tough, but because they mean that you have made a promise that you will always be untouched. Yeah, that's not easy. There's a lot of things that we're touched about. You made a promise. You will not possess anything. And if I took the clothes from Sylvia and tossed them out, See, my clothes, but I look all high and low to find those clothes. My clothes. You see, no matter, oh, she wouldn't say that, would she? No, she wouldn't say that. Or if I took Anita's lovely, lovely, lovely hat. Yes. And she loves that hat. She's possessed by that hat. If she didn't have that hat, she would not feel good. And you know what she did? She had one hat that was so bad. It was so bad. It should have gone, by the way, long before. She gave it to somebody else to wear because they thought it was such a cool hat. Now, it continued living. It continued going on. But can you do that? Can you come to the monastery here and say to yourself, everything I have, I'm giving to the monastery. The monastery is going to feed me and house me and clothe me and take care of all my needs. And when I leave the monastery, if I leave in a harmonious way in myself, then I will have a suit of clothes and I will have the wherewithal to go where I must go. Not because I deserve it, not because it's a promise, but just because that's the way it is. Now, if you believed you deserved it because somebody else got it, you can be sure you're not going to get much, if anything. You may get a boot in the behind. But if you just said, hey, I'm willing to go away from here naked if I must, because everything belongs to the monastery, and we'll say, well, there's some rags out there you can take. No, if you have respect for the program, if you have respect for all of it, and you say, I don't expect anything when I leave here. I have already gotten more by being here than I could have ever gotten anywhere else. And if I worked on some other job, I probably wouldn't have any money left over either. But I don't expect anything. And when you don't expect anything, the doorways are open for things to pour into your life. Like some of Sylvia's long dresses that the two or three or four you could fit into, you know. So, you see, this is something that we have to be very careful about. We want to blend our ideas with action, with attitude, with our inner awareness. And when we blend these ideas with our inner awareness, what comes out of that? Being a master. Now, taking away rules from you does not help you to be a master. Giving you rules does not help you to be a master. But whatever you have agreed to do at one point or another in your life, if you will do that, I guarantee you, you'll be a master. You'll be a master long before you have an opportunity to prove yourself on all of them. Now, why can I say that? Because you're no longer possessed by yourself. You're no longer touched. You're no longer judging anything. What's the other one? You're one-pointed, yeah? See? And these other good things over here too, self-discipline, self-dedication, self-diligence, and self-determination. Wow! How do you know when you're a good pianist? When you don't know. You just play, and you love it, and you play well. And you play weller. You play better and better all the time because you just don't pay attention to it. And if anyone says, will you play for me? Sure. You don't say, oh, me, I believe it. Yes. Yes, I'll play for you. I wish I hadn't asked. No. They play, and they play well. But always take the privileges of demonstrating who you think you are. And when you do, wow, it's great. We want to blend the ideas with the principle that we're working with the actions that we're doing. And we want to live a fabulous, fabulous life. I love you. You know that?